Hello, my soul-seeking friends. It's Shanna. Thank you so much for listening to Sense of Soul podcast, enlightening conversations with like-minded souls from around the world, sharing their journey of finding their light within, turning pain into purpose, and awakening to their true sense of soul. If you like what you hear, show me some love and rate, like, and subscribe. And consider becoming a Sense of Soul Patreon member, where you will get ad-free episodes, monthly circles, and much more. Now go grab your coffee, open your mind, heart, and soul. It's time to awaken. Today on Sense of Soul, we have Anthony Mindel. He is a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, acting coach, motivational speaker, and the founder of the International Anthony Mindel's Actor Workshop for those who are looking to expand their acting skills. He is also the podcast host of In the Moment, the acting and theater podcast, where he tackles subject matters around social causes and what it means to be a human in the 21st century. Anthony has written 5 best-selling books on creativity and silencing your inner critic. And he's joining us today to tell us about his new book, Unstuck, a life manual on how to be more creative, overcome obstacles, and get shit done. And it's my honor to have him here with us today. So please welcome Anthony.
How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Good. Do you pronounce it Shanna, right?
Yeah, like banana.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm super excited to talk to you. I was listening all morning. I was listening to your YouTube. I can't wait to hear about your new book.
Yes, is Unstuck. It came out last year. They're all creative manuals and how to get unstuck or get out of our left brain into the, you know, right hemisphere. Yeah, they're all different insights about the creative process.
I think being stuck is probably most people's issues, especially I think after COVID. Did you find that?
I mean, I didn't have that so much during COVID, but I do think you're right, because I think COVID brought up a lot of stuff for people where maybe they realized I'm not doing what I want to be doing. I'm not maybe being more intentional about my life or the things that I really wanted to do. I put on the back burner, and now COVID was a reminder. We don't have time. The circumstances of life can like force its hand at any moment and, you know, create a reckoning. And so I think it made people realize like, wait, why am I doing the thing that I'm doing? And Shanna, I think that is important because I do feel like a lot of, like, since I work with so many creatives, it is their desire to, I'm not big on that word purpose, because I have a chapter in Unstuck about that word purpose, because I think sometimes it gets co-opted. So I like that we use the word intentional before, because our purposes change every moment. Right now, like if I'm intentional about being with you and, you know, uplifting an audience or a listener, but that purpose is going to change when I'm done and I'm going out the door and heading toward my day, right? I also think like purpose sometimes, it's a word that we affix onto us, and it's kind of more capitalist driven, because you have kids. I don't know how old they are, but what is the purpose of a child? It's not about having purpose. It's about being. So I think sometimes we get really worked up about, I've got to find my purpose in life and it has to be purposeful. And I think actually that can actually work against us finding our true value, where we can serve different ways of being expressed creatively. And it wants to change. I think we get stuck on like, it has to look the same all the time. Does it?
God, we get stuck on so many things. I was just thinking just the words themselves.
Yeah, the words, the labeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Wait, were you always this smart?
I mean, you know, it's funny because I used to think I was so dumb. Mm-hmm. And I still kind of, I don't ever tell myself that anymore. Like, you know, but I used to think that I was book smart, but not street smart, not like, but now I realize like my intuition or my insight, not that I'm smart, but my insight comes from meditating and like just having a different, maybe understanding of the creative process that maybe can help illuminate people who are stuck.
Wow, you're so positive though. And would you start by maybe telling me a little bit about who you are and where you came from and what were you like as a little Anthony?
Well, a short story is I grew up in the Midwest in Indiana. And, you know, I guess when I look at my life, I was always very creative. And I was also always sort of my role in the family has always been like the mediator. And so I always feel like I was always on a very spiritual quest, even at a very young age. My relationship to spirit, or I would dwell like I think kids do, they dwell in another world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And as we progress and we get older and we start listening to the left brain, we kind of pull ourselves away from that knowing or that imagination and that domain. And I guess at some level, I think that that's part of the journey that we're all on. Sorry, I'm going off on like a philosophy I have, but like, I think life is about trying to come back to who we were as kids, which is more connected to some other awareness than just the labeling binary world where the structured world we're living in, right? And so I was an actor. I lived in New York. I went to school in London, and then I moved to LA 25 years ago, and I started working, was still acting, but then I started working with creatives and actors, and then over the last 10 years I have schools all over the world, and I feel like the work and the writing that I do in my books is not just for actors, like homemakers and moms and people in the military like will seek me out and be like, oh my God, I read your book and it really changed my perspective on the creative process.
Relationships too. I saw, right?
Yeah.
Things that, you know, you can use like any of this work, I think, in any part of your life, no matter who you are.
Well, I think like it's great that you said that's, you know, we were talking about labels because relationship, how many kids do you have?
So I have 4, 26 to 11.
Oh my gosh. You have a 26 year old?
Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. And
you're so young. How old are you?
I'm about 48.
You're rocking it. You look amazing.
Thank you.
I think we get so, again, stuck on the identification with the label and then what we think it means. And if you think about relationship, it's not a noun, it's a verb, because we're constantly changing and we're relating to someone. How you are now at 48 is different to how you're relating to your kids and your family and your in-laws than when you were 40. And I think we get really stuck in life in, we call something a name, and then we have a very strong picture of what we think it's going to look like. And then we see a media representation, which is not real, about what it's supposed to look like. And then if you get this thing, then your life is happily ever after. And that's a fiction. And I think people are often, their lives are really, they're unsatisfied because their life does not match the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tried to fit. I did a really good job. I'm not an actress, but I was acting most of my life, you know, playing the role and trying to be the best, right, at everything. And my kids were going to be the best and they were going to make me look better and all of this. Oh, yeah.
How did that work out? Yeah, see?
You know, and really I was trying to live up to all of the mothers I saw before me. And I thought, man, I'm failing at this because I'm losing my shit. Like, how did they do this? And no, it doesn't. It doesn't quite work when you're trying to live everybody else's dreams.
But maybe you also realize, like, it's also, we're projecting onto people this idealized mythology about their life. You know, it's compare and despairism in a way, but you're only seeing a little sliver of their pie. You're not seeing when they go, it's like, this is why social media is so maddening to me, because we see the curation of a 30 second or a 1 minute, you know, summation of their life. That's like hashtag Ibiza, you know, hashtag whatever, Super Bowl, you know what I mean? And then you're not in their life 24/7. And the common variable is we're all human beings. We're all fragile. We're all vulnerable. We're all stumbling towards some ending to a new beginning again. And nobody has it figured out. Nobody.
No.
So
I hate those fake, you know, family photos. I'll look at them sometimes of my friends and I'm like, dude, they're like on the verge of totally
ending. Collapse. That's
they're
right.
Like sitting there acting like They are so in love.
That's so funny.
This portrays to people that what's wrong with my life, because it's not like that. And I find this with children often, where they'll look at this beautiful family or this dad holding this sign on the side of the soccer field and think that that is what makes a good family, a good father, and all these things. When this dad over here, who maybe has to work all weekend and can't make it, would die for you, loves you, you know, no less than, but yet you think this because this is the picture that you see. And it breaks my heart. And I think it causes that FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yeah. Although I joke with my a producer, I just finished this movie and she produced the movie, and we call it JOMO, joy of missing out, because that whole FOMO aspect, right, is you're scared you're going to miss out. And then you go to the thing that you were really scared that if you missed out, you were going to miss the party of the century. And then you go and you're like, it's these people and it's this, you know what right? I mean? So you realize again, it's not real. It's just not. I think we live in a culture of distraction. You know, again, I kind of blame the tech world and social media. Not that, you know, the tech world has given us a number of amazing technological advancements, but in terms of social media and the sort of code that's embedded in it, set up to make us addicted and always searching for that next endorphin rush, right? Like, I mean, they've all talked about it. And I also think it's created this fracture where we're seeking something other than, can I not just find a moment of happiness right now, doing nothing, being locked off or offline, just sitting in nature or in my garden and not constantly having to seek the rush of something else. So I think that's where FOMO comes from.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it's so freeing when you don't have to, you know, have that fear of missing out, which fear seems to be the root of all evil.
Yeah, it really is, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, fear is false evidence appearing real, right?
That's what's,
yeah. You know, in my own life, I'm always looking at, gosh, behind the excuse or behind the complaint or behind, I don't know, the no, when I say no to things, if I look deeper, there's always a fear attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I remove my first response, and then I kind of unpack the fear. Oh, I'm a fear of being vulnerable, or a fear of being seen, or a fear of failure, or a fear that I'm going to be ridiculed or judged, right? And if we can just sit with that and then, I don't know, still move forward in that direction, having it. I think the thing is we think that life is supposed to be devoid of fear. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I'm sure you know, like, you just have to take the fear along with you. And then you see it's like fairy dust. It's not really real.
Right.
But it does occupy a big chunk of real estate in our heads.
It's in our DNA.
Yeah, that's right.
Literally.
Well, that's true. It's also the primordial part of our wiring. So it is needed, right, for us to, like, we wouldn't be here. Thousands of years of evolution has served us with the fight, flight, fright response, if I said those right. You know, the reptilian brain is there, but we're not fighting a saber-toothed tiger anymore. Again, I think I promise this is not a podcast of blaming social media, but social media does also, as you have kids, you know, it does trigger that response. The reptilian brain does get stimulated. It's not healthy.
I was just thinking, my two older children their first social media was just really coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have like TikTok and stuff at the end of their high school. They maybe did a little bit. So they kind of escape that just a little bit. And of course, they're in it now. But my son, Ethan, he's on the spectrum and he's 20 and he really didn't ever do it. In fact, we're all afraid when he does, we're all monitoring him. And then my youngest is 11. And thank God she's not quite there yet, but it does make me worried because there are so many. You know, you get on that algorithm. That's what worries me, is the algorithm. So right now, when she's on something, she just sees Roblox and like fun kid stuff,
funny
and
stuff.
Puppies,
yeah.
And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just one wrong search and God knows where she could end up. And that's what scares me. And I think this is what they've been talking about in Congress lately with all of the owners of all of the social media, which needs to be talked about because we didn't have to deal with this when we were little. I mean, we literally had to wait to go to school the next day to find out what was going on.
It's true.
I mean, I literally sat on my kitchen counter attached to a wall, having conversations, making emergency breakthroughs, like how rude, to my friends.
Oh, you had call interrupting or
right.
Yes. I didn't even have nervy. That. I had the old school phone with the long cord rotary. And I would stretch it, the rotary would stretch it around the wall so my mom and dad couldn't hear me on the phone.
Oh my God. And if you missed a number, good Lord.
Busy. Yeah. It's like, why are they talking on the phone for so long? There was no call waiting.
It's so crazy just to imagine how things have, you know, evolved so quickly.
Progress, yeah.
Right. Which is why people shouldn't be so stuck, because you just don't know what's going to be in 5 minutes from now.
Well, I think that you speak to a really interesting point that's coming to me now is that, okay, first of all, our brain is not able to process the amount of data that we're receiving in 2024. It's just, we're not equipped. Our own evolutionary process has not caught up with technology. So it is stimulus overload, right? And I also think I know a lot of your listeners are on a spiritual path or a meditative path. You know, I think it also is anathema in a way to just being. Like, I think we have such an addiction to stimulation now that it's really can bring up a lot of anxiety when people are just being. But there's a lot of science that proves, like, for me, in terms of working with creatives, we're at our best when we just go for a walk without listening to a podcast, although I'll listen to yours. But we have to not always be doing things with something. I'm guilty of that too. I listen to podcasts a lot, but what is it to just like take a walk or be in the garden or sit? Yeah, it's too much. Again, I think it's like we're all taught that multitasking and processing all that information is you've got it.
Like you're successful in doing all of it. Yeah.
But also it's been proven that you're not processing really at a deep level. No, you're hearing sound bites. That's right.
Hey listeners, so sorry for the interruption. I'd like to tell you about Uncovering the Mysteries of Kabbalah, an amazing opportunity to be mentored by one of Sense of Soul's affiliates, Rabbi Matthew Ponack. If you've listened to my prior episodes with him, then you know he has a ton of wisdom to share and is offering Sense of Soul listeners a special discount to take a deep and personalized dive into Kabbalah and the unfolding of your own personal journey. If you're interested, go to MatthewPonack.com/Sense of Soul. That's MatthewPonack.com/Sense of Soul to learn more and sign up. Now back to our amazing guest.
Hopefully people who are going to be listening to this podcast are just going to like be zen with it. Just lay down on the couch and listen to what we're talking about. This is why also, Shanna, they say that this Harvard, Ellen Langer, she's done a lot of, that's her name. She's a Harvard sociologist, I think. She's really amazing. And she has shown through her work that when we go on a vacation, let's say, a vacation is fun, not just because, okay, you're in like a really beautiful Caribbean place or Mexico or whatever, or Europe, but also because it rewires your brain because you're experiencing something new. So you've disrupted the way you habitually see life and how we are programmed. Like if you drive, this is one of the things that she recommends. If you drive to work every day, she says, and you take the same route, she says, just by giving yourself permission to go a different route, even if it takes a little bit longer, will re-stimulate a different neural groove, because she talks about it as noticing things. And noticing things creates a space of possibility, potential, hope. Yeah, it's really simple processes that I think are available to all of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because half the time you're driving to work and you're like, how did I even get here?
Yeah,
I don't even remember, because you're so in your head. That's it.
You're
just so dangerous.
Completely unconscious. I know. That's right. We're not here, so to speak. I love your sign there. It says, more peacemakers, healers, restorers, storytellers, and lovers of all kind. The planet. Aw, it's going to make me cry.
My best friend got me that, and I love it. And I used to not use my own background, but I just love it so much.
And that's like my mission.
Me too.
I just came. I just finished this movie we shot in Greece and Canada and India and Taiwan and South Africa and Namibia. Yeah. And they're all love stories that then culminate in a climate crisis. Yeah. Really excited about just kind of sharing the human aspect of living in a warming world and how, you know, I think people can really relate to love. And how do we, you know, before we started the podcast today, we were just talking about, because I live in California and we've had historic flooding. And, you know, as I think as our world warms, we're still going to love and get married and have kids and divorce and move. And, but I'm trying to explore that part in a world that's changing. And so, yeah, I think when I read that, that's kind of my mission in life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Speaking of storytelling, which, you know, I listen to people's stories all the time, but there is a point in my life in growing up, being vulnerable was a weakness. In sharing your story, it's like, don't tell people your business.
I hear that all the time.
I mean, you don't want people to know, you know, you're struggling or anything like that. And so my best friend, Mandy, used to co-host with me. I mean, she just like tells everything. And I'd be like, oh my God. But the thing is, I learned that through those stories is connection. And this is something that we've been lacking. I've been here. I've done this. I've been there too. And it makes people feel less alone, because you can feel so alone sometimes, many times in this journey. And I think that also keeps you stuck.
I love that you said that. Yeah, we have a convoluted relationship with vulnerability and we think it means weakness, right? But vulnerability is really the core of being alive. There's nobody on this planet who's not at their most basic self vulnerable. Like, I always joke, like, you know, we think the Target is real or Walmart or, I don't know, Spotify, and they are. But in the big scheme of things, we're all living on a chunk of rock spinning in the middle of dark matter in one cosmos, a part of one of many solar systems. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So in 100 years, everyone we know right now, including you and I, will no longer be here. And a new generation or a new existence will begin for a new group of people. And I think Target, as we know it, won't be here either. Right. And so these things that yeah, for sure.
Sucks. I love Target.
Yeah. Sorry, Target. I hope Target is not sponsored by Target. Or maybe they will sponsor you now. Nothing against Target. I'm just using it as like, we are so oriented toward, I don't know.
It's attachment.
The physicalness of things, but we're so more than that. But sorry, I was going up on vulnerability and just trying to remind us all that that's when I take a broad perspective of my place in the cosmos, it feels very, for me, it can be very freeing, right? Mm-hmm. But this idea of vulnerability, you know, Brene Brown said it best, you know, she talks about how vulnerability is really bravery. Because vulnerability means, I'm going to paraphrase it, but living in emotional uncertainty and emotional exposure without knowing the outcome.
Right.
And that is the core. Nobody here knows how the story is going to end. Nobody here really knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And so we are emotionally exposed. You're emotionally exposed talking with me because we don't know that I may say something that may open your heart and make you cry. But that's also the point of power. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not weakness at all. It's really the ability to share, as you said, with someone your story and you realize, like, I can relate to that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your story is helping me.
Mm-hmm.
That's why for me with climate stories, I'm really interested in like social stories, like stories about what are happening to people in this time. I'm a little obsessed with time. So I feel like my movies deal with time in some way.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, again, it's by sharing a story, somebody can call you or text you or DM you and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you gave voice to that because I feel that all the time. But I feel like I'm crazy because nobody else talks about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the point.
Mm-mm, absolutely. Like, I always loved to talk to, like, my grandma who was a mama. In Louisiana, we have mamas. There's so much wisdom when you're able to listen, but yet there's this generational difference where you take like a 70-year-old man and like my 26-year-old son, and put them together, they just have seen the world so differently.
Completely.
That it's really hard for them to find a common ground. And I think that this, when it comes to even like politics and stuff, this is a huge issue because we haven't lived the same world. We haven't seen the same scene, right? And so our experiences have been so different that it's hard to really relate. Mm-hmm. And so I have four different generations in one house.
Wow.
And it's so apparent to me that this generational difference or not being able to see eye to eye. But the one thing that you can usually connect with are like those stories. And so, and I think it's very important for the older generations to support these younger generations instead of saying, in my generations, we did this and worked until then and did this. That's not really being vulnerable, right? That's just, I'm better than you. Why aren't you doing it my way? Right? Like, I'm sure that that man also, you know, faced challenges that could really, really inspire or connect with somebody. But I think that connection is so missing between generations.
Yeah. I mean, also just between people. Even like you kind of were talking about that. I mean, it's incredible. You have four different generations, so you're learning a lot that way. But what jumped out at me, what I'm kind of working on is, I'm realizing, like, you know, the divide that's happening, not just in our country, but everywhere. And you feel like you're looking at someone across the line and you have nothing in common, like you're talking about. I've just really been practicing empathy in terms of, it doesn't mean I have to agree, but I've also realized, like, whoa, you know what? If this person was born in my experience or had similar, you know, nature, nurture aspects like I had, they may see the world like I see it. And if I were born in New Orleans, I might have this perspective. And so all of a sudden you find the common ground. I think it's empathy that we have
lost. It is. Do you hold space for people? And I watched you do this in all of your videos as when you were in groups. You really hold this very safe space, a non-judgment space, which is exactly what I think we're talking about. Like, if we could all do that, you know, because what I see here that I think that is so good across the world, they may see it as absolutely something so bad. Mm. But does it make it good or bad necessarily?
Right. Well, that's true, right? Except our own a judgment about, I mean, also, if you look at it, the biggest spiritual picture of it all is none of it's good or bad, right? Like from a divine perspective or even a scientific perspective, it's just neutral. I think it's also in our own life, the things that we think that happen to us that are quote unquote bad often prove to be really helpful for us in the long run, right?
So it's teacher.
Right. It's all cumulative. But I guess for me, though, too, is, again, I feel like this is a promo against social media. The reason why we lack empathy is because we're misinformed. And that's the job, again, of disinformation. So if you hear a soundbite and you glob onto it because it's triggering your reptilian brain and people get scared, then they hold on to something because the way it was or the way they're familiar, instead of coming and being really open-minded to hearing a different perspective based on truth, based on science. We've kind of lost that aspect. And that, to me, is why we cannot find this common ground.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I started to read the Bible for the first time with new eyes, I was like, dang, I've been told some fake news like my whole life. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, you know, we've been sold stories that really are just trying to benefit those in power.
In power.
And in who want to be in control. So I mean, everybody can look at any scripture and have a totally different perspective.
Interpretation, yeah.
You know, absolutely. So I think that that inner journey is so important, you know, to kind of shed all the conditions, everything you've been taught, and start to live by your own experiences and find your own truth.
That's right. And Shana, also, like, I think the thing is when you start to do a deeper dive on, like, I don't want to say religion because it's so, again, triggering for people, but sacred texts or philosophy or, you know, religious doctrine or whatever, you start to see they're really writing in symbology and metaphor and simile. That's right. Allegory, great word. And from there, wow, like they're all the same. Then you see, oh, Islam is not different from Christianity, is different, not different from Judaism, is not different from Hinduism. The core tenets of the teachings are the same.
And we are the same.
Yeah. We are the same, but we've been, you're right, it's been co-opted by power. An organization makes money by teaching it this way, and it's often fear-based or exclusionary.
Mm-hmm.
It seems quite rudimentary when you look at the challenge. I think like when I look at like what we face in life, I'm like, well, it's just really like low-level thinking. If we just kind of raised it up a little bit, we'd get past the most basic interpretation of things. Right. That's something that I think in the business that I'm in as well, is when I find an artist is up against something and the feedback they get is very basic, or it's like a buzzword that's used all the time, I'm like, that's low-level thinking. Let's just come up with an original idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I love that you brought that up. Yeah, it's allegory.
Yeah, I think all of these things that we're talking about, you really are fighting against it, because all of these things are really hardwired within us and have been for generations. I feel like for the first time, we're able to find this sovereignty for ourselves without being called a heretic.
Right.
Or a witch.
A mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I mean, that's crazy. But this is where we've evolved to. So it's beautiful. But it's like, so these systems are falling. And so you have this uncomfortable period where people are stuck because they're not quite sure, what should I do? What should I believe? What's the next step? I'm going against the grain. It doesn't feel comfortable. I think this is just one of those moments in life, like that butterfly, you know, that's about ready to, you know, come out of the cocoon that's struggling.
Yeah, I love that analogy. Yeah. I think the challenge of life is to be a free thinker.
Yeah,
and to break sort of our epigenetic line, right? Of my parents, God bless them, they're amazing. They were, I'm first generation American. They were immigrants.
Oh, where from?
From Germany. To be a child of immigrants, they were very poor. They grew up at the end of World War II. And anybody who has an immigrant upbringing knows that, like, for me, it's breaking this. You have to struggle and you have to work so hard, which, okay, yeah, one does work, but this attachment to the struggle and how hard it is something that I'm trying to break. That's part of, I get it. They had like a potato a day to live off of. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It was really, So that's ingrained in their psyche. And then that gets passed on to us. And then if I were to have
kids. Generation.
Yeah. So I think it's about you're having to like forge your own path. That's scary, though, for people, right? It's easier to just take what's spoon-fed to us.
Absolutely. I mean, I totally went against the grain. I mean, everything I do is against, and then I feel defiant.
Oh, right. Yeah,
you know what I mean? And then there's that, you know? And, of course, I'm aware of it, though, you know, as soon as I feel it come in. Because, you know, it comes in, and I'm like, God, I'm so defiant. They're going to be so ashamed of me.
Yeah.
They're going to say, why is she speaking so much? Well, damn it, because no one did before me, and I'm reclaiming this power.
What sign are you?
Sign, I'm a Taurus.
Oh, you're a Taurus. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful word, though, in a way. Yeah, but I get it. You're like, why is she so defiant?
I was so good my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. Not so good always, but they thought that I was,
The picture of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're abiding and going with the flow and but really inside there's turbulence. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. They're freaking out. Why is she saying so much?
Yeah, but we haven't, you haven't said anything. Like you haven't, we're just talking about creativity and being a storyteller and speaking your truth and finding it out for yourself. That's not, I mean, is that radical?
Kind of. I mean, I'm definitely a recovering Catholic. And I'm very open about that. I'm definitely open about it.
I joked about that all the time.
Yeah. And I also discovered that I'm French Creole. Mm. I'm French Creole, but I was told I was French and Italian. So I did 6 years of ancestry and pretty much broke this for everyone. And It affected a lot of people. I mean, I'm not going to write that book yet. I'll wait for a while. However, I am writing a book on the Gnostic Gospels. And so,
here's
the thing. I feel like part of what I discovered in my lineages is that women couldn't have a voice, especially women of color. And I would have been considered Black. You know, even though my skin tone is not, I would have been considered Black. I mean, and I would have not been able to marry anyone outside of my color. And my father was probably white, and he wouldn't have wanted me to marry any. So, I mean, we're talking, I would have been a single mother with no voice. And the only thing I had was my children in the church. And then it made sense to me why I am who I am. And so that's when I just said, no, you know, this stops with me, and my daughters will not, you know that life. They will, you know, own their way in life and have their own experiences rather than living by what everybody else told them to be.
Mm. You probably were a witch in a previous life.
Oh, absolutely. And I had Marie Laveau in my tree. So, you know, this is coming through.
Wow. Okay. Wait, who is that?
Marie Laveau is the voodoo queen of New Orleans from the 1800s.
Part of your ancestry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
she's
incredible.
In my two different lineages. And, you know, in the 1800s, she was a woman of color that was feared. Can you imagine how much power that is?
Oh, wow.
So I grew up thinking she was the boogeyman. Now I'm like,
you're like, she was a goddess.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. But you're right on. You're doing what I'm not going to use that word purpose, but you're finding your own way, which is really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Right.
And there's so much sovereignty there. You feel free. You no longer feel stuck.
That's right.
I'll give you an example. My son, he's 26. He had everything going for him in high school. He was living up
the dream
to all of the dreams of his parents, his grandparents. I mean, he was going to be a baseball player before he was born. Mm-hmm. How fair is that? I even chose his religion before he was born. Just think about that. Most of us do. How fair is that? You're going to choose someone's beliefs before you even met him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to choose his sport? You can decorate his entire room, even by a college, because that's your college. You don't even know this child. And his senior year, his arm went out. And I just thought, this is a mom's worst nightmare. Like, what? You know, and I remember even telling me, I'll play, but I'll play for you and I'll play for grandpa and all the. And I said, well, you damn right, because I spent my whole life. This is how I was back then. And then after high school, when he couldn't play, he didn't go to college. And he basically looked at me and said, which base do I go to, Mom? Coach me. Where's my fans? I don't feel loved. And it just broke me. I was like, holy shit. What did I do? What did we do? Not just even me, the family, the community, your coaches, society. And then all I could do was give him the space to find out who he was.
Wow, Shanna, I mean, that's an incredible story in terms of, first of all, I love that. Yeah, like you chose, I never thought about it that way, but we choose their identity in a way, right? Like we choose what they wear, how they look. For a lot of people, it's almost choosing their gender if they don't identify with that gender, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, certainly their religion, that's hilarious. I never really thought about it. Yeah, you're like, you're my son and you're going to be baptized. You know what I mean? They may be like, I feel like I'm one with, you know, Buddhism or whatever, you know, and their freedom to explore. But, you know, you're just part of the structure of a society that says that's the way it's done, right? And I do think, like, it sounds very similar to, I was a swimmer and, you know, I think a lot of famous athletes have talked about that. And a lot of them who have, let's say, had Olympic success, and then that part of their life is over, they're completely lost because their whole life was prepped for them to get this achievement. And then they got it or they didn't get it. And then their life falls to shit. So I think you need to just be gentle with yourself. And also, he's in his early 20s. He's figuring it out, you know, and it may take some time.
There's a lot of undoing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Undoing and then like letting what his muse is present itself.
Yes.
Yeah, we often, this is kind of why this is a lot of my work is like, we do things because we're told we have to do them without realizing, is that even what I want to do? I'm doing that for my mom or my dad, or because I have to keep this legacy alive, that word, you know, these imposed doctrines, as opposed to, I actually want to go travel the world and serve, or I want to make pottery or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's so bizarre to me, but not because the system is entrenched.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially for me working with creatives, it's hard for people to own their creativity. It's kind of like a sacrilege because for many people, they've been taught, and this is not parent shaming, but right. Parents, I get it. They just want the best for their kids, and they equate the best for their kids means getting a really great paying job. So you become a doctor or a lawyer or I don't know, an accountant. And yet the spirit of the kid isn't that way. They're wired to be a singer or a dancer, but that doesn't quote unquote have longevity or it's not safe. And so then they have very strong parents and they themselves haven't developed that part of their voice yet. They go to school. Then all of a sudden, by the age of 30, they're a lawyer and they're miserable. So it's being brave enough to like follow your inner story. Because we all have one, right. You know, but it's not practical. That's the problem.
Yeah. Right. There's no box that you can check off sometimes for, you know, who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also part of the fun of the journey. Or also maybe you are an accountant until you're 30 and you're really successful at it. And then you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
I want to do something else. That's the thing. We also are really obsessed with this culture about you're a basketball player your entire life. And then you get into the Hall of Fame and then that's your legacy. But maybe when you're done playing basketball, you want to go open, I don't know, an engineering program for kids. Right.
Or go to college.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah.
I think we're very, I don't know what that word would be, but we're very myopic in only one career path.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. The cool thing about living today, we have access to so many different things that we can do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm. Especially women. Whew.
Yeah.
You know, so it seems like there's more opportunity today than there has ever been for all.
For sure.
You know, I'm a different mom today, right? And so with my younger one, she got a little bit luckier than the fake mom. I was watching one of your videos where you were talking about how we shift almost like who we are in different spaces. And I know for myself, especially this space, like this is my most authentic space because I love to talk to people. And what's interesting is that I never thought that sense of soul would ever land on anyone's ears. I mean, I hope that maybe it would help one, two people, whatever, you know. And I remember our first year, we were so happy. We were like 20,000 downloads. And now I have like over 1.2 million, you know, or whatever.
That's incredible. And,
you know, it's like, I think that people, they want real. And I hear this often. But I also have people who will come in and say, you need to do this and this and this and this. And they try to put me on a different path, but it's due to more likes, more downloads, more video. This is what you have to do for social media. And it pulls me out of that space that I love just right here. I don't do it for likes. I'm top 1%. I'm proud of that. However, I never did it to be on the top of anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, truly from my heart. That passion will get you higher than anybody's strategic plan.
That's right. It can move mountains, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I think like what you said about, you know, when we start to do things for it's great. If you want to monetize what your work is, or, you know, for me, I mean, I can only use myself as an example. Like I've written books because I see that the work that I've done in the classroom applies to all kinds of creatives. And so I know that there's value in it, right? But like you, I didn't do it. You can't, I feel like I can't put the thing in front of the reason why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it for clickbait or for likes, or that's great if that comes from that. Mm-hmm. But also I think, Shannon, like that's the deceptive part again of social media, is it's not real. It's not real. Right. We've all drunk the Kool-Aid because there's, first of all, there's a logarithm. Secondly, things are siloed. So you're only going to get the kind of information or the shows that you already kind of are wired to get. Third, can be bought. You know, you can get likes. You can have Russian bots like your stuff or hate your stuff. Like it's mm-hmm. not a real thing. And I work with lots of influencers who, I'm not saying that their numbers aren't real, but I guess, trying to peel back that curtain so that people see what's behind the curtain. It isn't likes and thumbs up because they're working hard and they're really trying to find their own voice in the content they're making. And some of them, you know, I have some, let's say students who have like millions of followers, right? But they're getting a little bit older and they're wanting to do the kind of content that they really speaks to them. But now their algorithm or their numbers don't like it when they deviate from what they've already done. But again, it's kind of, we've come full circle. Like the top of this show, I guess, was all about, we transform beyond our labels. We're not the same as we were 2 minutes ago, an hour ago, 10 years ago. And we have to be brave to keep stepping into the new you that's calling us.
Yeah, be brave and be authentic.
Yeah.
It does take a little bit of bravery to be real.
A lot. It takes a lot.
Yeah.
It takes a lot.
Don't live somebody else's dreams, right?
That's
don't
right.
Just be you.
But you're inspiring lots of people. And I'm so glad you had me on today.
Yeah, you're amazing. It's so comfortable. Shannon. Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can get your book, plug yourself. Yeah,
thanks, guys. If you're interested, I mean, you can find all my books on Amazon. I mean, the breakout book is called At Left Brain Turn Right. But also like my latest book is called Unstuck, and it's really for creatives. It's really helping people get unstuck in their lives. So you can find me at www.anthonymeindl.com, or like I said, all my books are on Amazon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shannon, for having me. Anthony was in the house. Thanks, Shannon. It was really fun.
Okay.
God bless. Care. Keep on Thanks. Keeping on.
Thanks for listening to Sense of Soul podcast. And thanks to our special guests for joining me. If you want more of Sense of Soul, check out my website at www.mysenseofsoul.com, where you can work with me one-on-one or help support Sense of Soul podcast by donating to my coffee fund. Thanks for listening.